everybody, welcome to another thrilling episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and with me today in the studio is Joe Sack. Joe, how are you?
Good, I'm fine, thank you.
Good, thanks for coming in. For those that don't know who you are, why don't you take a second to introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm a program manager on the SQL Server and Azure SQL Database product team with a focus on query processing.
Okay, so we've had quite a few shows. We've had Tobias and Slava in, we just had Bob Ward in, we've had quite a few performance videos, but this is going to be an interesting one because it's about the adaptive, and this is new to me too, so I'm excited about this show.
Great.
So what is adaptive QP?
So AQP, and it's an informal name, so adaptive query processing, and the concept behind this is query processor does a good job with different workloads, like OLTP-centric workloads, data warehousing workloads. So we're doing a good job with a lot of different types of applications, but there are known areas where we have problems. There's probably a long tail of different issues that we might have under specific circumstances, and I'll get to a few examples.
So is this anything like, so we talked about, you know, with Bob, we talked about the intelligent database thing where, you know, kind of learning and does like machine learning to figure out, you know, bad queries and perform queries. Mm-hmm. Is this related to that at all, or how does this,
absolutely,
where does this fit into the picture?
Yeah, this fits into the whole intelligent database theme that you've been hearing about.
Okay.
So how can we start to adapt based on customer characteristics and real-time conditions?
Okay.
And so these three features are just a start. So the way I describe it is adaptive QP is a feature family, and I want more members to be added over time, and I want to evolve the existing members.
Okay.
So what you're seeing is the first three members for SQL Server 2017, and then also Azure SQL Database. So just a few weeks ago, actually, Azure SQL DB, if you turn to compatibility level 140, you'll have all three of these features out of the gate.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right. So I'm excited about the demo.
Yeah.
Okay,
so let me show you three different demos. Let me start with, I'll describe one of the features, memory grant feedback.
Okay.
All right. So conceptually, if I have a query and I'm executing that query and it has an operation in it that requires memory, we will ask for a grant, like give me X amount of memory.
Okay.
Now, if I'm optimizing a query, I have certain assumptions that are built into that. So the optimizer goes, you know what, I think 100 rows are going to flow through this query, so therefore I just need this amount of memory.
Okay.
Conversely, if we have a scenario where it's not 100 but it's a million, then we might ask for more memory. So pretty obvious.
Yeah.
We don't always get that right. So assumptions may not be correct.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's incorrect, prior to 2017, we have scenarios where we will just stick with the plan that we gave you.
Okay.
So if we didn't ask for enough, we're going to spill to disk. If we ask for too much, we're still going to keep it.
Okay.
And we're not going to change the behavior.
Gotcha. Okay.
So let me show you a demo. We have a TPCH modified database. So it's like a 10 gig size database.
Okay.
And I've added column store indexes. And what I'll do is I'll just clear the cache just so we have a nice clean demo. And I have this TPCH benchmark query number 12.
Okay.
So this is shipping modes and order priority.
Okay.
And I'm going to include actual execution plan here. And let's just go ahead and execute this query, and you'll see why we're showcasing this for memory grant feedback. Okay, so it returns the result sets very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to the execution plan, you're going to see this little warning symbol right here. Okay, now if I focus in on the warning symbol, what do we have here? We say memory grant detected, excessive grant. So we asked for a half a gig, but we used 20 meg or so. All right, so 18 meg.
Okay.
All right. Now, why is this a problem? So for my query, it's not a problem. Great, you gave me way more than I needed. I ran quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I have 50 of these people running at the same time, we have a problem. Because now you're going to start gating. So if the optimizer says you all need a half a gig, so I'm only letting a couple of you through.
Right. Okay.
All of a sudden, we start seeing this unnatural gating because we're not even using that memory.
There's a bunch of unused memory land from people being used, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And they call this like resource semaphore wait. So you basically have semaphores and you're waiting at this gate. And in this example, we're not using this memory. So it's going to waste.
Okay.
And it can impact overall concurrency.
Okay.
So memory grant feedback, what does it do? If it detects scenarios where I'm asking for too much or I'm asking for too little on consecutive executions, we will let them benefit based on that prior feedback.
Okay.
So if I just execute this a second time, we'll look here and no warning symbol. And if we look at the actual memory granted, we see it's 26 meg. So significant reduction. Now we could probably run 50 of these concurrently, and that there's not.
So it learned that, you know, this query has been run before. It initially asked for this, but it only needed this. So now when we run it, we're going to give it really what it needs.
Exactly. And so it's just simple feedback. We update the cached plan.
Okay.
And then consecutive executions will benefit.
Ah, sweet. Okay.
So one other little demo here on memory grant feedback. So I have the spill scenario. So we're not asking for enough memory.
Oh, okay.
So,
yep.
So I'm going to use Wide World Importers DW. And again, I'm just making sure that we're running at compatibility level 140.
Okay.
And I'm creating a procedure just called fact order by lineage key. So I'm saying select from this fact order fact table based on a specific lineage key. And the input parameter is that lineage key.
Yep.
Now, I bet you've had guests before talk about parameter sniffing scenarios in the past. So, so we're going to set up a classic parameter sniffing scenario.
Okay.
So I have this new procedure, and we're going to get unlucky, and I'm going to now execute it with a non-representative parameter. So I'm going to pick a parameter 8, which I happen to know there are no rows for this.
Okay.
So let's execute this. No rows get returned.
Yeah.
My execution plan, if you take a look at just even looking at the lines, you see that it's very skinny.
Yeah.
Its assumptions are very low row based.
All right.
Now, we were unlucky. This happens a lot to customers, though. Somebody hops in with the skewed or jagged distribution value.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's go ahead and execute with a value 9, which happens to be every single row in the table. So we have this cache plan. It assumes skinning. Every single row on the table is now going to flow from this.
Okay.
And now this probably takes, I think last time I tested this on my laptop, depending if Outlook was on, 11 seconds altogether, 13 seconds.
Yep.
Okay. So execution plan. A few different warnings here. So you see just warning symbols and a few different locations.
Yeah.
And if I go over the sort, let's just take an example here. We see a warning about operator used tempdb to spill during execution with spill level 8. So it was pretty deep spill level. And then if you look at the actual memory granted, we asked for 5 megabytes. So if you go down here, you'll see 5 meg.
Okay.
So not enough. So we were spilling to disk. We weren't asking for enough. So again, based on feedback, if I re-execute this again, what was it originally? 13 seconds. Now we're down to 1 second.
Yeah.
And why? Because we adjusted the memory grant.
Okay.
You know. So pretty simple.
That's awesome.
But yet, and so. And by the way, if we look at the memory grant size, you see it's now 80 meg.
Right. Okay.
Now, if we oscillate, so if we go up and down, we'll disable that feedback. But for scenarios where you get that unlucky parameter sensitivity scenario, this could be very helpful.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, because will there ever be a case, or how often will be the case, where you're going to get that that scenario you just had where, you know, asking for rows that don't, just you get the initial query plan and then the real query plan back and forth a lot. Does that make sense?
Yes. Right. Yeah. So if you have that oscillation, we'll disable behind the scenes because it doesn't make sense to keep adding or subtracting continually. And it doesn't solve the inherent parameter sensitivity issue.
Right.
It's just one tool that could handle some of the scenarios.
So you could actually turn that off then, correct?
Yes. So if you're not running compatibility level 140. Now, otherwise, we'll turn it off for you if you have this up and down scenario.
Oh, okay. So behind the scenes, you'll turn it off.
Exactly.
We'll turn it off. Okay, cool.
Yep. So that's one of the features for AQP.
Okay.
Second one is adaptive joins.
Okay.
Okay. So from a join perspective, if I'm joining two different tables, we could have three different physical algorithms that get used. So we could get nested loop operation, a merge operation, a hash join operation.
Okay, yeah.
And where it's appropriate, there's a lot of different circumstances that or conditions that would make one appropriate over the other. But if we take a scenario like low row count versus high row count, we can generalize and say low number of rows, nested loop operation is probably going to be optimal. For high number of rows, we might say it might be merge or it might be hash join operation.
Yeah. Okay.
So this operator, this new operator called adaptive join,
mm-hmm.
Essentially says, look, let's not make a decision until runtime. Let's make an educated decision up front, but then based on the row flow, let's adjust whether it's hash join or nested loop in real time.
Okay, so you could actually change the join type dynamically.
Yeah, with the same cached plan.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So to demonstrate this, again, I'll use the TPCH query. This time I'll use query 18, which is the large volume customer. And right now I have enabled two things. I have include actual execution plan enabled, and then I'm also going to show you live query statistics, which Tiger Team and Seals put out, which is awesome. And so just to show the row flow so you can see how it's going through the plan. And I'm creating a stored procedure for this, and I'm going to take in a parameter that has quantity. And then you'll see that this quantity is just referenced within the body of this select. So I'm going to go ahead and create this, and let me just do the drop if it exists. All right, so adaptive join. Let's show two different scenarios. So the first is I'm sending a parameter of 314. And if we execute the query, live query statistics, you're seeing the row flowing. And I'm going to actually stick around this area, and we'll wait for it to finish. So we see new operator, adaptive join. So this is brand new in 2017, brand new in Azure SQL database. And you're going to see something that you're probably not used to before if you've looked at nested loops and hash joins, which you normally see two branches. With this, you're going to see three. So for the first branch, we have our main input. And by the way, this says nested loop, but we just think of this as that was feeding our input branch. And then we have a second branch, which is our probe phase of a hash operation, and our third branch, the index seek, which is part of a nested loop operation, should we end up performing that. All right, so a few things to see based on the live query stats. Notice this branch had zero rows flowing through it. This is our probe phase. So we already know we didn't go with a hash join. For nested loop operation, we see rows flowing through it. Now, we don't have to just look visually to figure that out. We also have attributes. So if we look at adaptive join, and I hover over the properties, we can see, estimated join type, we think it was going to be a nested loop. Actual join type, it was a nested loop. And then we have something new called an adaptive threshold. And the way to think about this is we do costing and we go, something becomes more expensive, we want it to be a hash join. But if it's not more expensive, then we want it to be a nested loop join. So in this example, if we exceed 1,200 some rows as our outer input, we will go with a hash join operation. That is the point where that cost intersection goes. You know what?
Is that a hard number based on?
It will vary query by query. So if you almost, you can almost envision, and I didn't do any slides today, but you can almost envision two different intersecting lines where it goes, here's how much it costs to do nested loop, and the more the rows, the higher that cost.
So that analysis will be based on the query and how many rows it thinks is going to be returned.
And it looks at that intersection. It goes, here's the tipping point where, you know what, a hash join makes sense, or nope, we didn't exceed it. Let's stick with the nested loop. So in this example, you saw we went with a nested loop. So this plan is cached. Now I'm going to execute it with another value where I know I'm going to get more rows. So I'm kind of increasing the overall space of the number of rows that'll be returned. And let's just return back here. And this time you're going to see, after it's done executing, almost done. This time you'll see now we do have rows flowing through. And no rows flowing through our nested loop operation. Now, let's go back to the adaptive join, and you're gonna see this time, we estimated we thought a nested loop would occur, but we got a hash match. So this is the first time we've ever had an operator that looks at those runtime conditions, and then we change a strategy. A lot of opportunities here.
I think this is awesome, but I think my question is, you know, how much education, I'm not quite sure how to ask this, how much education is going to go into, if I'm a developer, do I even need to worry about this, or is it, I just write my query now? I mean, I don't want to say dumbed down, but, you know, am I still, as a developer, concerned about how I write the query?
I hear what you're saying. So, no, you shouldn't have to worry about it. There are a lot of known areas where we would like to improve over time. And we're trying to build in these mechanisms and expand them into other areas. This is really, you'll see for all three of these AQP features, they're all doing different things in different ways, and they will be reused in other areas.
I think my concern is that, I think this is awesome because, you know, it goes back to this intelligent database thing, you know, and how we can improve automatically and, right? But I can see a developer going, the engine will just fix it. I can write a bad query and the engine will just fix it type of scenario, right? And I don't, that's not what we want. Right, but I think there's still some, I think this, you know, there's the, you know, forget the 80-20 rule maybe. We still have to do our 20% and then Or more, right? Whatever that is.
Yeah, it's not a free for all. Now every anti-pattern we can use as first class citizens. And that's good to point out. We're basically looking at what are the most common, frequently encountered issues. And can we start addressing them piece by piece? And now with you've seen we had 2016. Now we have 2017 with this improved cadence, and then also running a service. We're a lot better equipped to start doing this.
Absolutely, because the learnings we get, all the telemetry data we're gathering from Azure SQL DB and how we can improve this, goes into these things, right? It's awesome. I love the ability for SQL Server, and I think everybody else will, to go, you know what? Let me learn and take out all that data that I'm learning and apply and auto-correct myself, right? But I still, there's still the responsibility of a DBA or developer to go, I still got to do my part to.
Absolutely. And by the way, there's a lot of discussion about this, of is the DBA role going away as we add these things?
And I didn't want to, I was thinking, as I said, but I didn't want to, so we're going
to,
see.
And it's okay to, so my answer is no. I mean, but if anything, I think ideally we leave behind the interesting stuff. Because, why was there a parameter sensitivity issue? Is there something that we should have refactored? I mean, that's just one example of many where you bring it up a level, and anything that can be automated, let's try to do it. And then the rest, ideally, that's the interesting part.
But I love that, based on the number of roads it can turn, hey, we might use this, or this is awesome. I love that. Okay, cool.
So then the third and last of AQP for this round, for this version, is interleaved execution. And specifically, it's interleaved execution for, and this is a mouthful, multi-statement table-valued functions. First of all, interleaved execution, what are we even talking about? So historically, we optimize and we execute. So we have that plan I mentioned earlier, and then we're stuck with it. If there's any changes in assumptions, sorry, we don't do that. For interleaved execution, this is the first time that we're saying, you know what, we see something that's noteworthy. Like we see a subtree that is high likelihood of having a problem with its estimate. Let's go ahead and let's materialize it, get the cardinality estimate, and then educate the rest of the plan. We're starting with the easiest part, multi-statement table-valued functions, the lowest risk. I shouldn't say easiest, but it's the lowest risk area, because it was already a black box. We were already materializing it. But if you have a function, from a developer perspective, there's a lot of virtues. So I can encapsulate, I can reuse.
That makes sense.
But historically in SQL Server, we don't implement it well. So we say it's a black box, one row is coming from this, or most recently, last two versions, 100 rows are flowing from this function. That's it. That's our guess. We say 100 rows. If it's a million, you're out of luck. If it's less than 100, great. But we're basically punishing that virtue of reusability and encapsulation. So I have an example here, a demo running through what we've changed. I'm going to set this to 130 to show you the legacy behavior. And I'm going to use Wide World Importers DW again. And what we have here is I'm selecting from order table. And I'm interjoining to a multi-statement table valued function. And it's called what if outlier event quantity. And I'm basically saying, look, if we have a mild recession, what impact does that have on order quantity? So just that's the general concept. So let's go ahead and did I go ahead and execute this? Let's do it just in case, just to make sure we're running at 130. And I have included my actual execution plan. Let's kick this off. Now again, I mentioned anything within the body of that function, we treat as a black box. It's off model.
We don't know we're getting back.
Now, execution plan, a few things just to point out. So you see some warning symbols in there already. But let's take a look at where the function is actually being referenced. And we're gonna see here, estimated number of rows 100 versus actual number of rows 231,000. So we're highly skewed, and this is a very pared down version, so the huge number of seconds, there's not a big contrast here, but it's more just to show you the problems that are being caused. So if we're reading it from right to left, we see, okay, we're assuming a low number of rows. If I hover over, let's say, the hash match, we're going to see that assumption then results in spills. So now we're spilling because we didn't ask for enough memory and so on. It also involves things like beyond memory grants, what join algorithms should you use, or what is the order of operations? Sometimes you want to filter fast and early. So we might not do that if we're not dealing with the right assumptions. All right, so that is the old behavior. Now I'm going to go ahead and update this to compatibility level 140. And
but you're still in, you didn't hit master yet.
Yeah, let's get that whole thing. All right, and then let me re-execute. And this is the interleaved execution MSTVF version of the plan. and you're going to see now no spills, and you're also going to see a different plan shape. So you'll see things like, okay, first of all, we asked for the right amount of memory, no spills,
yep.
But you see the relocation of this MSTVF right here, so the actual output. So it's actually on the inside of a hash match operation, so it's part of the probe phase. An estimated number of rows, we shouldn't even really call it an estimate anymore because it's the same as the actual.
So what is going on behind the scenes to be able to accomplish that? What's the engine doing to say, all right, because since it's still a black box, right?
Yeah.
What are we doing behind the scenes?
So what are we doing behind the scenes? So we'll basically say during optimization, we see some MSTVFs in here, one or more.
Yep.
And what we will do is we will stop, and hence here's where the interleaving comes in. We will stop optimization. We will execute that MSTVF. We will pull out the cardinality estimate. We will basically introduce it back into the optimization process, and downstream we optimize based on that informed decision.
Okay.
So we go in and out of optimize, execute. If you have multiple references of MSTVFs, we'll go in and out and in and out until we're done.
So you actually go, okay, let me run this by itself. Let me figure it out. All right, now that we've got the information we need, let's go execute the
query. Exactly.
Does that improve? I think a lot of people are going, hey, if I'm jumping in and out like that, what's kind of performance going to be? Or do I actually get the benefits of better performance because I know what my numbers are going to be when I execute the thing as a whole?
Yeah. I think you were about to say overhead, which I appreciate. You know, you were like, how do I reword this? But basically, is there extra overhead? We picked a very low risk area. Okay. So this was already being materialized.
Yeah, you were saying that earlier. Yeah. Where, like, let's get the low hanging fruit type of area.
So it's extremely likely you will benefit or have parity. So if I have just a few number of rows, and really I didn't mind the 100 row guess, you're going to be okay. It's not going to add that much overhead.
Yeah.
And then for the areas where you really should have a different plan shape, you're going to benefit.
Okay, and that's a good point. You're saying if I'm really not returning, if I'm going from like 100 rows to a couple thousand rows, I'm really not going to see that much benefit.
Yeah.
But if I'm going from, you know, estimate of 100 rows to hundreds of thousands of rows or millions of rows, then I'm going to see that benefit.
Exactly, yeah. And you could say that for the other features as well, it's really, for example, adaptive joins, it's for those scenarios where you do have very different distributions or very different frequencies based on that input parameter value, for example.
Well, and I like the visualization of all of these, especially this one, because I can look at the original plan and then look at this plan and go, this is much different, right?
Yeah.
The entire shape shift. Right, and tells me that something really changed on how that was orchestrated.
Great, processed.
Awesome, Joe. Thanks for coming. This is awesome.
Yeah,
so you said there's I'm assuming hopefully correctly that there's going to be more work along this adaptive QP stuff.
Yes,
right?
that's the plan.
Okay,
and again, I want this family to grow and evolve, and I want nieces and nephews and so everything. So
want that family tree just go. Yeah. So if we want more information about the initial kids.
Yep.
Right. Is where can we find out more?
Easiest
about that?
Way is just search on adaptive query processing.
Okay.
It should be the first results. That there's an actual books online article on adaptive query processing. And then at the very end, by the way, if you want to practice some of this, there's actually a link to GitHub repository where I have a backup and some example scripts you can use.
Oh, cool. Very nice. So, okay, awesome. Great. We definitely look forward to having you back to introduce us to some of the other kids and nephews and nieces
in
the
good.
Family.
Appreciate
Joe, thanks
your
for
time.
Coming. All
Thank
right.
you.
Hey, everybody. I hope this was helpful. It was for me. Loved it. Hopefully it was helpful to you. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.